Welcome to the church. Dr. Roman is with the presentation tonight on osteoporosis. He has some books, some materials. This is the latest one that he has produced. It's called Resurrection versus Life After Death. A little booklet, material that have very compelling information in referring issues about health and religion. So if you are interested in any of this book, you can talk to Dr. Roman and he can provide you and we can help you, okay? And I read his book about vitamin B12 and I really enjoy it. So some of you have read that book too. So I hope that you have a good afternoon. Yeah, good program tonight. It's okay if we have a prayer before beginning. So please can you stand? Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this beautiful day that you give us here in Aiken. And we are very grateful for the opportunity to be here at church. We are asking you for a special blessing for Dr. Roman and his presentation that can be a good benefit for everybody here tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Yeah. Welcome, Dr. Roman.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. So good to be with you. You know, this is my second time here in Aiken, and this time around, I knew that I would see familiar faces rather than the first time when I came. It's like, well, almost everyone was a stranger in a sense, right? So I'm glad to be with you. And I will be presenting actually a topic that is not very easy to present. And that is, this is really the beginning of what we can talk about osteoporosis prevention, okay? There is actually so much that I would need to present, and I still have about 70-something slides here, so I don't know whether that's good news or bad news, but I hope it will not be too long, and I'm trying to use this and see whether this actually will work. I would like you to notice a subtitle also for this presentation. The title, as you can see, is Osteoporosis Prevention, but the subtitle is Consider the Unthinkable. And I will explain what I mean by the subtitle as we go along, okay? I want to say right away that really, regardless of to what degree you apply some of the recommendations that I will be discussing, the reality is osteoporosis is very complex, okay? But this is a very complex disease. And as we age, we slow down and we lose what we call lean body mass. That means we have not as much muscles as we had when we were younger. We accumulate more fat and we have less on bone structure. And so we can somewhat delay, you know, these processes, somewhat prevent them, but eventually, regardless of what we do, we end up with a little more fragile bones and less muscles and more fat and stuff like that, you know? And so I will share with you a few factors that actually have nothing to do with osteoporosis, even though many people believe that they do. And then I will also share a few factors that we know from research studies that are helpful in osteoporosis prevention. But again, there will be a limitation what these factors can accomplish, okay? So before we go actually into some of the studies that I want to show you, I need to introduce you to several different terms, okay? These terms will be helpful and I will come back to them as we look at certain slides. First, bone mineral density, okay? Bone mineral density basically means the thickness of our bones. And so we have the thickest bones when we are roughly 30 years old. And after the age of 30, the bones start to lose the bone muscle, the calcium and phosphorus and other minerals, and we have less and less thick bones. Another thing is something called alkaline phosphatase, okay? And this is basically a measurement of bone resorption. What that means is, again, remember, as we age, we are losing some bone mass, okay? And we can measure how, and we recall it, call it bone resorption. And we can measure how much of that bone resorption or the losing of bone mass take place by measuring this particular compound called alkaline phosphatase, okay? So if this compound called alkaline phosphatase goes up, that's bad news for us, okay? Because that means that we actually are getting rid of the bone structure, you see? Okay? Further, osteoblasts. Osteo actually means bones, and osteoblasts means bone-making cells. So if we have healthy osteoblasts, that's good for us because we can actually put up or put more bone muscles, okay? And then another term, osteoclasts, which means bone demolishing cells. That means that again, we will be actually what? We will be losing bone mass if we have actually higher activity of these cells called osteoclasts, okay? And then we have osteocalcin, okay? Notice increased amount is indicative of excessive bone resorption. So basically osteocalcin does or indicates the same thing as alkaline phosphatase, okay? And then we have the last one here. And notice this one means increased amount of this is indicative of bone degradation, which pretty much means the same as resorption, means that something wrong is going on with our bones, you see? So any factor that will increase the amount of this or this or this in the blood means something wrong is going on with our bones, okay? Now again, I will come back to these terms as we look at some studies because I know there's a lot of them and I'm pretty sure a lot of these terms are new to you, okay? Let me ask you this question. What factor or factors play a role in osteoporosis prevention? What factors do you think? I'm curious what answer you would provide to this question. What factor or factors, plural, do you think would be important in osteoporosis prevention? Can you tell me? What do you think? And please be brave. This is not for grade, okay? So, diet? Well, I am asking you to be more specific. When you say diet, what do you mean, okay?
Calcium, vitamin D.
Vitamin D, okay. Calcium, anything else?
Whether your diet is leads to acid or base.
Okay, so whether the diet will actually cause the body to become acidic versus alkaline, okay? Good answers. Exercise, so a non-dietary factor. Good answer again. I want us to notice that one of the factors that we mentioned is calcium. And in reality, I get an impression, if you watch news, if you watch TV, that calcium and calcium and calcium and calcium and calcium and calcium is what is being emphasized over and over and over and over again. And many of the other factors are hardly mentioned. Am I the only one?
Yeah.
You know, that's the emphasis. You know, when I teach my students at the university where I teach, I point this out to them, and then we go into studies, and my students discover something that they have never heard of. And I think you will discover something tonight that you will be surprised by. So let me go right into this, okay? Two more questions. How much calcium, let's see, it's calcium, do we need to ingest, okay? What is the usual calcium intake among Americans, okay? So how much do we have to ingest? And then whether our intake actually matches what the recommendation would say, right, that we need to ingest. Now, I ask these questions for a good reason. And now let me show you what these reasons are. First, before I actually get to the answer to how much, I would like to point out this data here. This is notice from the National Dairy Council. And the National Dairy Council is an interesting organization because National Dairy means what? They promote the sale of dairy products, right? And dairy products are the best sources of calcium. In fact, in the American diet, on average, 72% of calcium that people ingest come from the dairy products. And so on their website, I found the following data. This is, notice, percent of people not meeting calcium recommendation. In a second, we will look at what these recommendations are, okay? And here's what they tell us. They tell us that depending on which group, which age group you are, okay, age and gender group you are, you may actually ingest very little calcium, right? You may be in trouble based on this data. Let's just use this one here. Adult women ages 20 plus and adult men ages 20 plus. I have a feeling that we all fit into one of these two categories, right? Notice, based on this data, 90% of women do not get the calcium that is recommended, and 73% of men do not get the calcium that is recommended. Now, would this indicate to you that we have a problem with how much calcium we ingest, yes or no?
Yes.
It would seem like, right? Well, let's look at something very interesting, okay? I have an illustration here, not a picture, but an illustration of people of different height, okay? Notice, from the shortest to the tallest, okay? And here's something surprising, something you may or may not know. Do you know that when it comes to pretty much any nutrient recommendation, the recommendation is the same for any of these people? In other words, the shortest person here looks like a female, right? Her recommendation is the same as the tallest fellow here. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that would be fine, or there is a problem in here? It should not be so, right? And yet, the recommendation is the same for any one of these people, okay? The recommendations, and this is not just for calcium, but we are discussing calcium here, right? The recommendations for calcium are set in such a way that if people follow that recommendation, 98% of the population will not have a problem with calcium intake, okay? Only unusually tall and large people may need maybe a little more. So if you can think of Shaq O'Neal, you still remember him? You know, the former basketball player, you know? He was, what, 6'9 or something like that, right? In height, and enough broad in here. He perhaps needs a little bit more. Everyone else, people like Kobe Bryant, is that what his name was? You know, that, again, retired now. Basketball player, I think he was 6'5 or something like that. And myself, barely 5'9, in fact, not quite 5'9. We all are supposed to follow the same recommendation. Now, that's a problem. Are you with me, what I'm saying here? Because what if I don't quite follow that recommendation? What if this is the recommendation for calcium, and I only follow, or I only ingest this much? Am I really deficient? I may not be meeting the recommendation, but is my intake adequate or inadequate? Not necessarily so, because the recommendations are set in such a way that people who are this tall and this broad have to follow and meet the recommendation, the needs. Are you with me, what I'm saying here? Okay? And so just because someone does not ingest the amount of calcium that is recommended, it does not necessarily mean that that person does not ingest adequate amount of calcium for that particular individual. Everyone with me? Okay? So in that context, if I may go back for a second here, in that context, perhaps this figure should not be sounding as alarming as they seem to indicate here. Are you with me, what I'm saying? Okay? Now let's go into here, you know, is again the illustration, okay? This fellow perhaps needs a little bit more. The recommendation for these two is identical for everyone here, okay? Now let's look at the recommendations. Now, when we look at the recommendations, I actually have a surprise for you. Why? Notice that I have here recommendations from different parts of the world. Here we have Australian recommendation, one from the United Kingdom. This is from the European Union, and this is for the United States and Canada. And again, there's a lot of data here. Let's look again here at adult males, females, and then even older males and females, 60 over 65, and postmenopausal women. Okay? I want you to notice something interesting. Let's just again use the last group here. Okay? The American recommendations say that people, males who are over 65 and postmenopausal women, should be ingesting 1200 milligrams of calcium a day. On the other hand, the recommendations from the European Union say that these people should be ingesting 700. Now, what is it about Americans that we need almost double the amount of calcium that the Europeans do?
Because we don't get enough exercise.
Are you suggesting that the Europeans do?
Yeah.
Well, maybe some, just like maybe some Americans do get enough exercise and others do not. I would like to suggest to you that there is a different thing going on here. And it has to do with that organization that I mentioned a little earlier. The organization called the National Dairy Council. Because again, you know that industry has an impact on pretty much anything, right? Everything, local governments, federal governments, state governments, even nutritionists, physicians, recommendations, pharmaceutical, business, things of that nature. I would like to suggest to you that this recommendation is actually, or was actually, because this is issued quite some time ago, was actually influenced by someone or an organization that actually benefits financially from sale, from the sale of foods that are the best sources of calcium. Now, the question is this. Which of these recommendations, and you know, we could point out big differences. Notice here, again, this is for adolescents. This is for individuals that are growing very rapidly because of the growth spurt, right? Notice even in this particular group, we have big difference. Here we have 500 milligrams difference in between. The question is this. Which of these recommendations is better, if there is a better one, and which we should follow, okay? So here is an interesting answer to this question. This was a publication or manuscript published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, the best nutrition journal in the world, okay? And these scientists actually wanted to find out how much calcium do we really need. And they did an experiment with a group of people, and here's the conclusion. The models that they worked with predicted a neutral calcium balance, okay? That means this is how much you need to ingest in order so you don't lose more calcium, okay? This is what how much you need, okay? A neutral calcium balance at intake of how much? 741, okay? Now, if I can scroll back for a second here, which recommendation would be the better one that we need to follow when we are looking for adults? And that's what that study was based on, the conclusion. The European seemed to be the best. In fact, possibly the Australian one here is 800, maybe actually the best of the, although we only considered the two, you see? So perhaps we don't need as much calcium as the recommendations are saying. Even the people who are much bigger than I am and much taller than I am don't need as much calcium as the recommendations are saying. Now, if we were to look now at the amount of calcium that people ingest and compare that to what we concluded was the better recommendation, would we still have the same figure? Would we still have 90% of women not ingesting the amount that is needed or that is recommended? Likely, very likely, that this would not be the case, right? Because we now what? Lowered the recommendation considerably. Pastor Ben?
Just a question. Do people lose calcium in the daily life?
Oh, yes. So, the bones, number one, the bones is not a dead tissue, okay? That the bone resorption okay, that I mentioned, that means losing the bone structure and then rebuilding. That's a daily occurrence. Just like with anything, like with our skin, like with anything, like with our hair. It's constantly, these are new cells that are being built and old cells that are being demolished, you see? And we ingest whatever amount of calcium, some of which we absorb, most of which we don't. We just get rid of it right away when we go to the bathroom. And then again, whatever is absorbed, not all of it is utilized. So some of it may be gotten rid of because we don't absorb it, and others may we get rid of through urine because we don't need it, because it wasn't utilized, you know. So we lose calcium all the time, you know. The question is whether we lose more calcium than what we need, or whether we actually have extra calcium that we ingested, you see? Because it's a daily thing that we lose calcium and we need to replenish calcium pretty much with the same with almost any nutrient. Yes. Okay? Now let's look a little bit further. Notice another conclusion from this study. The findings suggest that the calcium requirement for men and women is lower than previously estimated. Okay? So that's number one point that I would like to make. Number two, let's look what is the actual intake and compare it to the American recommendations. Okay? So here we can, again, we have data for different age group. Notice girls, boys, and then adolescent girls and boys, and then women and men that are adults. Okay? And I have noticed in red, okay, in red is the US recommendation. In this color, kind of light green, I guess we can call it, is the European, okay? And then intake is in blue. Notice that for many groups, okay, the recommendation is, or some groups that we recommend, the intake is actually higher than even the American recommendation, right? And for pretty much all of these groups, the intake is actually higher than the European recommendation, okay? Now, when we compare the intake to the American recommendation, it is not necessarily higher. This is the mean or average intake, okay? But notice further. Notice, in all subjects or participants 2 years or greater, the usual intake of calcium was 910. That's pretty close to the recommendation, right? Okay? The percentage of this population that exceeded the adequate intake, that's the recommendation for calcium, was almost one third of them exceeded actually the intake. Okay? And then here we have for adults, the average was 869 rather, and 26% exceeded the recommendation. Okay? Now this was, let me go back for a second. This data here was noticed for 99 and 2002, so that's pretty old. So I have here the newest data, okay? Much newer, 2009, 2010. And again, we have here, excuse me, the actual intake, okay? Notice, again, above the recommendation for males, or maybe slightly lower than the recommendation for females. What I'm trying to do at this point of time, I'm trying to show you that calcium intake is not really a big problem. When we consider the fact that, number one, the recommendations are likely higher than what they should be, number one. Number two, not everyone needs to follow these recommendations because not everyone is of this stature, you see? The calcium intake is likely not necessarily a problem, okay? But with this introduction, I would like to answer this question. How important is dietary calcium intake in osteoporosis prevention? Okay? Because again, over and over and over and over, we hear, whether in the media, from health professionals, from dietitians, from physicians, that we need to ingest what? We need to ingest more calcium, right? In fact, I know a lot of women, especially women, who take, in addition to the dietary calcium, meaning from foods, they who also take what? Supplements, right? Calcium supplements. And oftentimes, these supplements were recommended or even prescribed by the health professionals. So here is a result of one study, and notice this is a conclusion from this study. Notice, total calcium intake ranged from means of 400 milligrams per day in quintile 1 to 2100 in quintile 5, okay? So from the lowest about 400 to the highest in 2100, double the recommendation, right? Notice this. A usual high calcium intake beyond the recommended dietary allowance of elderly women and men, most commonly achieved by calcium supplements, did not do what? Did not provide any benefit for hip or lumbar bone mineral density. Okay? Hip or lumbar referring to the spinal column, right? Okay? Did not provide any help. Why do women ingest calcium supplements? Because they are losing the thickness of their bones, right? They are losing calcium. The thickness of the bones is what? Is diminishing. So they use this extra calcium from supplements to prevent that or to combat this problem. The study here shows it had made no difference. A dietary intake of calcium approaching or meeting the current recommendations was not related to higher bone mineral density of the hip or lumbar spine in late life compared with lower intakes of calcium in older adults. What this quote is saying is that whether you exceed the recommendation, whether you meet the recommendation, in comparison to someone who has much lower intake, it will make no difference. That's what the quote is saying, okay? Now let's look farther. Notice this quote. Like most, but not all, prospective observational studies, ours, these researchers say, found no relation between calcium intake and protection from hip fracture, even in women with very low intakes. Now, did you notice that? Most studies did not show any beneficial impact of high intake of calcium. That's what the quote is saying, okay? In fact, here we have specific data. Notice each of these indicates study. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different studies. Some showed a little lower risk of, this is for hip fracture. Some showed actually a higher risk for hip fracture. Taken together, there was no difference in the in how much calcium we ingested in terms of risk for hip fracture. That's what this study is showing here. Notice, observational studies failed to show any association between dietary calcium intake and risk of hip fractures, okay? Here we have another set of analysis based on 7 prospective cohort studies for women and 5 prospective cohort studies for men. And here's what we find. Notice, this is a comparison. Here is a comparison of, notice, hip fracture risk for men and women, okay? Between group of men and women with the lowest intake, higher intake, higher intake. This is around the American recommendation intake and intake beyond the recommendation, okay? What do they show? They show no difference whatsoever in the risk of fracture of hip, okay? In other words, whether you ingest this amount, whatever that is, it's less than 555 milligrams, or whether you ingested this amount, it made no difference in your risk of hip fracture. That's what this study is showing, okay? Furthermore, notice here, this is, again, calcium intake and hip fracture risk, okay? Notice that in this specific analysis here, okay, this is for what? For calcium supplemented group, okay? So this is not calcium from dietary sources, but calcium that was ingested with supplements. Notice what they showed. What they showed was that those who ingested calcium supplements had actually 64% higher risk of hip fracture. That's what 1.64 means, okay? So the very thing that mainly women, although some men also, but mainly women use to prevent from fractures in this analysis based on 1, 2, 3, 4 different studies show that it actually increased the risk rather than decreased the risk. Okay? That's what it showed. Okay? Notice, pooled results, pooled means from more than one studies pooled together, from prospective cohort studies suggest that calcium intake is not significantly associated with hip fracture risk in women and men. Pooled results from randomized controlled trials showed no reduction in hip fracture risk with calcium supplementation, and an increased risk is possible. Are you with me here? Now, I told you I'm going to surprise you, right? Somewhat, okay?
Now, this is straight calcium, but I have gotten the ads where it's calcium plus strontium plus so this is just straight, nothing but calcium.
Well, when it comes to the supplement, that's just calcium, yes. Okay? But again, when we ingest calcium from foods, there's plenty of other nutrients that are ingested with that calcium in foods, right? But the analysis specifically that showed a higher risk for hip fracture were based only on ingestion or intake of calcium supplements only. Yes. Yes?
Dr. Roman, so other than increasing, if you take too much calcium, you can increase your risk of fracture for hips. Is there any other health complications if you take it?
Oh, yes. I'm getting to it, okay? I'm actually getting to it, okay? Now, before I get to answer this question, I want you to also see something very interesting, okay? Notice this is milk, dietary calcium, and bone fractures in women study that took place for 12 years, okay? And here, this analysis is based on how many glasses of milk the participants in this particular study ingested, okay? Those who notice with the lowest frequency, one or less glass of milk per week, 2 to 6 glasses per week, one daily, and then 2 or more glasses daily. And this here, this column here, shows us the risk of hip fracture. What do they show? They show that those with the more frequent drinking of milk actually had a higher risk of hip fracture. That's what this study is showing us. Now, they further did additional analysis, and notice here, this is calcium from dairy products, from the lowest, higher, higher, and the highest. And what do we find? The higher the intake, the what? The higher the risk of hip fractures. Those who ingested this much calcium, okay, from dairy products, in comparison to those who ingested the lowest amount, had almost double the risk of hip fracture. Okay? On the other hand, here we have non-dairy calcium. Non-dairy calcium meaning what? Where else do we get calcium from?
Vegetables.
Veggies, right? Different veggies. Okay? There's actually some in fruits. Even orange, you know, has 50 milligrams or so of calcium in one orange, okay? So whatever other sources that provided this. And notice that in this case, at least to a degree, the numbers actually are decreasing rather than increasing. Any number that is above one means increased risk. Any number that is less than one means decreased risk. So up to a certain point, we actually see a reduction in risk. And then past that, if we actually ingest more calcium, it would also further increase the risk, okay? Notice, in the 12 years of follow-up, that means 12 years of the duration of the study, we found no evidence to suggest a decreased risk of hip or forearm fractures among women with greater milk intake. No significant association was observed between teenage milk consumption and risk of adult fracture. And yet, this is what our teenagers are being told, right? That's what they need to do, and there is no research to back this up, okay? Let me show you yet another data set, and this is yet another meta-analysis. Meta-analysis, if you recall from my last time when I was here, means kind of like a summary. What can we learn from the different studies that were conducted, okay? And this is, when you look at this, there is a European studies, there is a Swedish study, there is a study from Netherlands, and from a variety of different studies. And notice what these studies are telling us. A low intake of calcium, less than one glass of milk daily, okay, was not associated with a significantly increased risk of any fracture, osteoporotic fracture, or hip fracture. That's what they are saying. Okay? Here is specifically a Swedish study, and this is actually from two different studies. One was done with women, one was done with men. And here, notice what they are showing us. This is very interesting. This will answer the pastor's question here, okay? Because this one, notice, talking about milk intake and risk of mortality, okay? And fractures, okay? And so what we have here, it is actually showing now us here the risk of death or mortality based on glasses of milk intake per day. And notice that these lines are going up here, which means what? Which means the mortality actually increases, okay? The more what this data is showing us is the more milk we ingest, the higher the risk of mortality, okay? Not only that, but notice this is data here for risk for hip fracture. The more milk we ingest, the line goes what? The line goes up, which means what? More or higher risk of hip fracture with more intake of milk, okay? That's what the data here are showing us. This is for women and this is for men, so not quite the same impact for men, but for women, and again, women have a higher risk for fractures of any side than women than men do, okay? And here we have data specifically, notice, for cancer mortality and cardiovascular disease mortality. Again, this is for women, this is for men. Pretty much no impact on mortality for men or death for men, but when it comes to women, the higher or the more frequent intake of milk, the higher risk of dying from cancer, and the higher risk of dying from cardiovascular disease. Okay? Now, let me suggest something to you. Okay? If anyone tells you, anyone, who, regardless of who that is, whether that's dietitian, physician, a friend, family member, regardless of who that is, if anyone tells you that you need to drink more milk and or eat more dairy products and or perhaps take calcium supplement, he or she does not know what he or she is talking about. Okay? Now, I face this all the time. See? In my department, I have faculty members who teach that, you know, teach students that that's what people need to do. Ingest more calcium. The data does not back up this claim. There is no evidence that it does. I showed you some. There are actually more. I selected reviews or meta-analysis, the kind of a summary of this, to show you that higher intake, I'm not saying calcium is not important at all. We need to have some calcium. Like I mentioned, we lose some calcium on a daily basis. But what we ingest typically is plenty. It's perhaps more than enough, you see? We do not need, simply speaking, we do not need more intake of calcium, whether from foods, from supplements, or any other sources. Here's another conclusion. For every glass of milk, the adjusted hazard ratio, that means risk of all-cause mortality, was 1.15, which means 15% higher in comparison to if we did not ingest that glass of milk, okay? For women, and it was non-significant really for men. And so now, for the sake of time, I won't read the whole thing here. We got the point, right? Here's another one. This is a different study. And notice we have the same outcome here. This is effect of calcium supplements on risk of what? That's heart attack, right? And or cardiovascular disease events, okay? And again, we have here data that is showing us that when we look at heart attack, it increases, okay? It increases the risk of heart attack, okay? When we look at stroke or sudden death, it increases a little bit less, but it does increase also. And again, this data also is showing us. This is those. This blue line represents those that ingested calcium, and red line shows those who did not ingest calcium, and those who ingested calcium had a higher risk for heart attack. Okay. So again, for the sake of time, I will scroll through this. As calcium supplements are widely used, these modest increases in risk of cardiovascular disease might translate into a large burden of disease in the population. A reassessment of the role of calcium supplements in the management of osteoporosis is warranted. I prescribe to this conclusion. Okay? And notice yet another one. Credible evidence that calcium supplements reduce the risk of vertebral, non-vertebral, or hip fractures is what? Is lacking. It's imaginative. It's based on what we've been teaching people for decades, but it's not supported by evidence that we have from studies. Yes?
The question was, there is difference in calcium supplements, because I think what Suzanne was saying, you know, that you can take plain calcium supplement or you can take with vitamin D or some other thing. Uh-huh. There is any difference in, or is just the supplements are equal?
You know, I can only show you what has been done in the different studies, okay? And so, you know, whether if you take, you know, calcium and vitamin D and or calcium with other nutrients, whether it will have the same impact, whether it will have different impact, whether it will be neutral, I cannot answer this because I don't know of a study or studies that assess that, you know. These studies basically look at people who ingested calcium supplements and people who did not. Now, oftentimes people who ingest calcium supplements also ingest vitamin D with them. Now, but I cannot say that it will have, because I can only stick to what the evidence is showing us. Now, I can show you, I don't actually have this included because I had to choose what I show you, what I don't, because we already have been here for 45 minutes and I still didn't get to the factors that actually will be helpful in osteoporosis prevention, you see? But I needed to kill this point, you know, to drive this home, you see? But vitamin D supplements does decrease the risk of osteoporotic fractures. I can add here. Now, whether it does it through calcium or whether it has an independent impact, that's something that remains to be studied, you know? Okay. Osteoporosis prevention efforts that focus on more calcium and or dairy intake focus on an ineffective osteoporosis strategy with undesirable side effects. That's my conclusion. And so this is why I had this subtitle, Consider the Unthinkable. You know what I mean by that? Consider the fact that calcium may not be it. In fact, not only it may not be it, they may actually be detrimental. Calcium, maybe, right? And so what factors do impact the risk of osteoporotic fractures? And we actually did mention some of them, and I will show you right here, physical activity, okay? In fact, I tend to think that physical activity is the best way to prevent from fractures. And it is not, it directly impacts the risk of fractures, but it also does something else. You know what it does? It strengthens our muscles. In elderly people, it actually helps in prevention of falls. And it is when the elderly fall when oftentimes they break whatever, hip or whatever other, you know, part of the skeleton, you see? And here I have a data. Notice this is a physical activity and rate of fall, okay? So for people who are physically active versus those who are not, those who are physically active have 29% lower risk of falling. That's what 0.71 here indicates. And that's based on many, many different studies. And here is fall-related fractures. And so people who are physically active had 40%, that's what 0.6 6 means 40% lower risk of actually breaking the bone as a result of falling, okay? And so when we look at physical activity, these are the guidelines for the elderly, okay? Notice, for additional and more extensive health benefits, older adults should increase their aerobic physical activity to 300 minutes or 5 hours a week of moderate intensity or 150 minutes a week of vigorous intensity aerobic physical activity. That's number one. And number two, older adults should also do muscle strengthening activities that are moderate or high intensity and involve all major muscle groups on two or more days a week, okay? Are you familiar with these terms? Aerobic activity means what? Give me an example.
Walking,
running, swimming, you know, playing tennis, these type of things, right? Muscle strengthening, what that may be? Weightlifting, right? Even push-ups and lifting your own body and things of that nature, okay? And that's what recommended. Now, I want to stress, because again, there is a misconception. The misconception is that if you do the muscle strengthening activity, that will be helpful for your bones. But aerobic activity doesn't have anything to do with the health, your healthy bones. That's a misconception. Both are important, okay? Because even the aerobic activity will impact the bone resorption versus bone remodeling, meaning what? Making the bones new, okay? Because remember, we lose the old bone tissue and we have to replace them with new. So both types of activities are important and helpful in terms of prevention of osteoporosis or osteoporotic fractures, okay? What about dietary / nutritional factors that impact the risk of fractures? Well, I divided this into two sections. Number one, food intake, and number two, nutrients, specific nutrients, okay? So when we look at food intake, notice, okay, this is a Chinese study, okay? Chinese study with more than 15,000 adults age 18 and over, okay? And in this study, the researchers identified different dietary patterns in the participants. They identified what they called traditional and modern dietary pattern, and then plant-based and animal-sourced dietary pattern, okay? Now, when we say traditional, keep in mind these are Chinese people here. What do you think that involved?
More vegetables.
More vegetables, more things like soya products, right? That's pretty popular in China, for example, okay? The modern, what do you think that will be? That will be visiting McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chickens and things of that nature, okay? Because this is what the changes that we see in many different countries, you know, this is what they look like. Notice the results here. After adjusting for potential confounders, that will be age, for example, right? Because as we age, we have higher risk and so on, right? Study participants in the third tertile, that means with the highest intake of modern dietary and animal-sourced nutrient patterns, cumulative scores had 34% and 37% increase in fracture risks compared to those in the first tertiles respectively, okay? So one more time, those who were more into modern dietary pattern had 34% higher risk of fractures, okay? In comparison to those who were not so much into that type of dietary pattern. And those who were eating more animal products, okay, in comparison to eating more plant foods, had 37% higher risk, okay? Now, we would conclude from this that what? What would be the better, you know, eating pattern? Eating more fruits, veggies, things of that nature, right? Beans, perhaps, okay? Well, let's look at yet another study, okay? This is yet another study, again, from China. You know, this is very interesting. It's very interesting that I'm showing you studies from China. What we as Americans pretty much have done is we moved all the different businesses to China, right? And in China now they have growth in economy and build new whatever places and invested in military, invested in space exploration, and are doing scientific studies. And now we are learning from them because we have less money now than they do for, you know, investing in the variety of different, including studies. Notice what they found in this particular study. The odds ratio of osteoporosis between tertile 3, the highest intake, and tertile 1 of fruits and vegetables intake were 27% lower in lumbar spine, 63% lower in total hip, 29% lower in femoral neck. Are you with me on these results are showing? These results are showing that people with the highest intake of fruits and vegetables in comparison to people with the lowest intake of fruits and vegetables had a reduction of osteoporosis in, you know, by that magnitude in the different skeletal sites. Okay? So fruits and vegetables seem to be here effective in osteoporosis prevention. Now, this is an Adventist Health study, the newest one, Adventist Health Study 2. I am part of it. Are you? Okay, some of you, very good. Okay? And notice what we learned from this. This is, notice again, sheep fracture risk by intake of selected foods. What do we find? We find that the more frequently people consumed legumes, right? That will be what? Garbanzo beans, right? White beans, pinto beans, peas, anything of that nature, right? The what? The lower the risk of hip fracture. And the same, although the magnitude was not as big, but the same was for meat analogs. Now, the meat analogs are composed of what? Soybeans, right? Okay? Now, there may be some other things added, but, you know, the bulk of the ingredient is soybeans, okay? And so what these data are showing us is that legumes that include soybeans, but not only soybeans, because we can see that in, or regardless of the soybeans, the other legumes were also affected, perhaps more so than soybeans themselves in reducing the risk, okay? So that's food pattern. Food pattern meaning fruits, vegetables, and then includes the vegetables, including what? The legumes, which are also in the vegetable family, okay? Let's look at nutrient intake pattern, okay? Notice this quote. Intakes of nutrients found in abundance in fruits and vegetables, namely potassium, beta-carotene, vitamin C, and magnesium, were positively associated with bone health. And I will show you some details. I don't have all the details because, again, I knew, you know, for the sake of time, but I will show you some details. But notice again, the emphasis is on fruits and vegetables and nutrients that these items are rich in. So let's look at potassium. This is one of the compounds that I introduced you to in the beginning. And we mentioned that the higher amount of this compound in the blood, that means what? Something bad is going on with our bones, okay? So we want to actually have it, what? Less of it in the blood. And notice what we find in here. What we find is that it is actually what? The amount is actually increasing, notice the increase here, if we ingest less potassium. Notice as potassium intake goes down, okay, this compound increases. Are you with me, everyone? Okay? And so this data is showing us that higher intake of potassium will keep this compound low in the blood, which is what we want to see. Because if it's higher, means what? Something bad is going on in our bones. Okay? Let's see, where do we find potassium? What are the best sources of potassium in our diet? Okay, here we have them. That's sun-dried tomatoes. I love them, absolutely. Do you have Lindl in town? The German store? You know, I buy the sun-dried tomatoes in that store, the cheapest, $2 something. In Walmart, $4. You know, I buy them all the time, use them for a variety of things. Notice, soya beans, mushrooms, black beans, kidney beans, pinto beans, adzuki beans, mango beans, navy beans. Are you with me here? You get the point. Beans seem to be rich in potassium, okay? Fruits and veggies are also relatively rich in potassium, but the best sources are actually beans, and so we should increase the risk of the amount of beans that we ingest, okay? Let's look at this one. This is, notice, vitamin K. Vitamin K intake and risk of fractures, and again, this is a meta-analysis, that means they included more than one study, specifically five studies, four cohort studies, one another type of study, okay? And let's look what they found, okay? We observed a statistically significant inverse association between dietary vitamin K intake and risk of fractures. Inverse association means this: the higher the intake, the lower the risk of fracture, okay? The lower the intake of vitamin K, the higher the risk of fracture. That's what it means. And here's the magnitude, okay? That's the magnitude between those with the highest to those with the lowest. That means 22% lower risk among those with the highest intake of vitamin K. Further, they say, when stratified by follow-up duration, that means for how long the different participants were a part of the study, okay, the relative risk of fractures for dietary vitamin K intake was 0.76, meaning as the study duration increased, they actually saw what? Bigger impact, okay? Bigger impact, positive impact, because it was a reduction in risk. Here's another analysis: vitamin K intake and hip fractures in a study called the Nurses Health Study from Harvard University. And here, notice what they say. Women in quintiles 2 to 5, okay, in comparison to those in quintile 1, which was with the lowest intake of vitamin K, okay? So women with the higher intake of vitamin K, okay, had a statistically lower age-adjusted relative risk. 30%, that's what this means, for hip fracture than women in the lowest quintile of intake of vitamin K, okay? Further, risk of hip fracture was also inversely associated with, notice, a lettuce consumption, okay? 0.55 means 45% between those with the lowest, with the highest versus those with the lowest. Lettuce. Why lettuce? I'll show you why. Because when we look at vitamin K, notice what are the best sources of vitamin K. What are they? Greens. That's what it is. Greens, okay? Now, lettuce is on the very bottom here, but, you know, pretty much the greens here, kale, Swiss chard, and so on, okay? Now, I'm glad I learned, living in the South, I live in North Carolina, I learned how to use the different greens, you know? I love it. Every day, pretty much, I have either kale or mustard greens or collards or leeks. Are you familiar with leeks? Oh, I absolutely love leeks, you know? When I use the onion, I always use leeks with that. And a variety of others, spinach, you know, a variety of these. The best sources of vitamin K are green, leafy vegetables, okay? And so we need to focus on these. We need to include those in a daily menu, okay? Here they are, a variety of them, okay? These are the best sources. Now, if you recall, vitamin B12 and homocysteine, I presented part of this data last time. So very briefly, those with the lowest vitamin B12 and highest homocysteine will have an increased risk of fractures, okay? And that has been shown in a variety of studies. I will not read this because we looked at this last time. And here I have an explanation of the mechanism by which vitamin B12 and or homocysteine impacts the health of our bones. There's actually more than one mechanism. There I have 8 different ones here listed, okay? And then lastly, I want to point out dietary protein, okay? Someone mentioned here alkaline versus acidic type of impact of a diet, or, you know, on our pH level, right? And this is what this will be dealing with, okay? Notice this is hip fracture, or I should say hip fracture free survival in over 1,000 women by ratio of animal to vegetable protein intake, okay? And so notice those with the ratio of 1:1, okay, had the highest hip fracture free survival, okay? Those with the ratio of 2:1, meaning two times or twice as much animal protein versus vegetable protein, had much lower hip fracture free survival, and those with the highest had even lower, okay? And so the impact here would be, and this is perhaps why we saw when we look at dairy products and or milk intake, we actually saw what? An increased risk in fractures, because dairy products and milk is an animal or vegetable source. It's an animal source, right? Okay? And it has to do with the very thing that that was mentioned, the impact of on the pH in the blood, okay? When we ingest more animal products, meats and animal products, the pH actually goes down, which is more acidic, which takes then calcium to regulate this and to increase it back to where it should be, okay? Yet another one, notice, cola, okay? Cola intake, okay? And risk for, this is femoral neck bone mineral density, okay? And notice, the more frequently people drank cola, the lower was bone mineral density, okay? So cola's not a good idea to give to your children. Here's another data, soda consumption and risk of hip fractures in postmenopausal women in the nurses' health study. In the multivariate or variable models, that means they adjusted the data for a variety of factors that impact osteoporotic fractures, each additional serving of total soda per day was associated with a significant 14% increased risk of hip fracture. Not a good idea, okay? Today, even professional recommendations tell us the best beverage to drink is, guess what?
Water.
It's water, okay? It's water, and we can actually adjust our taste buds to drink water rather than anything else. Now, I have here sort of a summary, although I have here nutrients listed that I just didn't have time to go to, okay? And here we discussed potassium, we've discussed vitamin K, vitamin B12, I briefly mentioned vitamin D. We did not discuss phosphorus or sodium. Let me mention right now that both phosphorus and sodium intake will detrimentally impact bone mineral density and risk for fractures, okay? And this is again yet another reason why dairy products may not be the best, because they actually are not only high in calcium, they are also high in phosphorus, okay? And some, like cottage cheese, are also very high in sodium, okay? And so ingestion of sodium is not a good idea. The reason why I put here decrease animal intake, animal protein intake, and the question mark is because it depends, you know, up to a certain level may not make any difference, okay? But if we ingest too much of it, it would actually increase the risk. When it comes to this one, phytoestrogens, that's what we find in soya beans, okay? But these have, again, the question marks are there because these have very slight impact, not a very big impact on the risk of osteoporosis, okay? And so here I have pretty much, again, a summary in terms of what we need to eat. Eat plenty of hard, healthy foods, including a variety of fruits and vegetables, especially green leafy vegetables and legumes, okay? Include soybean food, such as soya milk, tofu, and perhaps also other seeds. We mentioned seeds also when we listed, remember, potassium also, there were some seeds listed there, okay? And then decrease foods high in sodium, okay? Make sure vitamin B12 status is adequate. Eliminate drinking of soft drinks. And then decrease intake of meat and other animal products. And replace them with, again, beans, legumes, okay? And with that, I'm going to pause. I talked for a little over an hour. And if you have any questions, I'll be glad to address them if I know the answer. Okay. Yes? How much are you asking? How much? Okay. Okay, so, you know, it's not easy to give the specific amount. I think more importantly, we should plan on having some of them on a daily basis, right? Not all of them. If you look at the picture, not all of them were green leafy. I had cauliflower and broccoli and things of the nature, Brussels sprouts, you know. We should plan the menu that either for dinner or for lunch, we have something from this included, okay? How much? One meal we may have more, another meal we may have something else. What I would also recommend is that we actually mix them. So I mentioned I absolutely love leeks. If you are not familiar, give it a try, okay? And every time I saute my onion, okay, I always have onion and leeks. And when I make kale or collards or mustardine or anything of that nature, I first saute the leeks and onion, then add this, you know. So if I have, say, a cup, I will never have a cup of kale or collards. But together, you see, between the onion and the leeks and whatever else, you know, and then I may have Brussels sprouts or broccoli or something else with it as well. And oftentimes what I do, I actually make either salad dressing or burger or anything like that made of, say, garbanzo beans or soya beans or some other legumes and or seeds, you see? So when we... Excuse me. I swallowed my own saliva and it went into the wrong... you see? So I don't know if I can exactly answer this much, you know. I think the focus needs to be that we need to ingest them regularly, you see? Yes, sir.
The brewer's yeast versus regular yeast, can you expand on it, or you don't want to?
No. Oh, yes. Do you mean brewer's versus nutritional yeast? Is that what you mean? Yeah. Well, the biggest difference that I can think of is that nutritional yeast is oftentimes fortified with vitamins, okay? B vitamins, you know, mainly, okay? Including vitamin B12, for example. Brewer's yeast, as far as I know, is not fortified. That's, to me, the biggest difference. You know, there's some other differences, I think. I don't actually know exactly all the differences, but,
yeah. Is there a certain amount that she should be taking? Because my cousin says he takes a pinch of the brewer's yeast.
Well, it depends on what we are looking at. When we are looking at, for example, vitamin B12, which again is added, okay, 2 tablespoons would be roughly what is needed. But these 2 tablespoons would have to be ingested on a daily basis if that's the only source of the B12 that we would want to have it. For other nutrients, I'm not really sure. I would have to look up exactly how much they add. I know that's for B12. For the other nutrients, I'm not sure. Yes.
Wait.
Yes.
Can you reverse the effects of osteoporosis if you change your diet? That will help you. And somebody wants to know if you eat too much spinach, is that can affect your kidney?
Okay. Good question. Okay. So whether you can, well, first, the reversal of osteoporosis will mainly mean adding some bone tissue, right? Increasing bone mineral density, okay? Now, that can be done, okay? That can be done. And the muscle strengthening activity would be the predominant way or the best way to do it. whether you can add enough bone mass to be sort of undiagnosed with osteoporosis, because osteoporosis diagnosis is done by measuring bone mineral density, okay? And they compare it to where it should be for a given individual, and if it's below a certain level, you know, you have the diagnosis of osteoporosis, right? And so you can add some bone mass, bone tissue. Whether you can reverse it to the point where you will no longer be diagnosed, that's very doubtful already, okay? So there, it's possible to do, you know, some. I don't know if it will be pretty difficult, you know, to decrease it. It would be much easier to prevent it or delay it with long-term physical activity and good dietary pattern. In terms of, you know, spinach does have oxalate, okay, which is a factor in kidney stones, for example, synthesis. But if we have adequate amount of liquid, preferably water, right, and we should not be ingesting, you know, 2 cups of spinach on a daily basis. Remember the principle of variety, right? So spinach is just one of the really quite a few of different green leafy vegetables. And we maybe if we have once a week, maybe twice a week spinach, that would be pretty good, I think. We should incorporate the others, you know. Now, if we have spinach, say, every day, I seriously doubt that if you have even, say, a cup of spinach every day, that will make a huge difference or huge impact on kidney stone formation if you have adequate liquid, you know. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Just this week, I had a bone density test done, and the results came back that I have osteoporosis in my wrist. My back is fine. Mm-hmm. I've got a problem with my wrist, mm-hmm. and I've been given a prescription to take once a week for the next year, and then I have to be retested again. But I forget the name of it, but it's supposed to help build that bone up again.
Yeah. Well, and again, regardless of the prescription, I would recommend do some type of activity, you know, if it's in the wrist. Even if you, I don't know, I forget the English name for this. What do you call it when you squeeze? No. I mean, there's a device that you actually squeeze like this to increase the muscle strength, you know. Or take, even buy like a 2 pound of weight, and do some type of activity. That will be helpful. You know, I actually had a full body analysis, including bone density and stuff like that. And very interestingly, I play tennis. I do it quite often. You know, I play usually about 4 times per week. And I expected, interestingly, to have thicker bone in my right arm than in my left arm. And interestingly, there was no difference. But there was a difference in something, which is very interesting. You know what the difference was? The difference was in the muscle mass. I had bigger muscle mass in my right arm than in my left arm. Now, we would think, okay, it didn't have any impact on my bone density. It wouldn't have any impact on bone fracture. Wrong. Because it is oftentimes the muscles, right? Like we mentioned in the case of the falls, the muscles that also protect, you know, the bones and stuff like that, you know? In fact, you know, the Bible says don't praise yourself type of thing, but I will tell you this anyway, okay? I actually compared my bone mineral density in my whole body to the average bone mineral density in the United States, and my bone density was higher. Now, I'm not that big, you know, because the weight also impacts, right? Bone density, right? Because if you are heavier, you have to have thicker bones to carry the weight, right? And so I was kind of pretty pleased with that. But again, I love some of the foods that I showed you, and I'm active, you know, I'm active. And I tend to think that the lifestyle that I live had something to do with that, you see? And so, you know, this is kind of personal. And of course, we cannot always straight apply what's good for one person to another, but it seems to be working for me, you know? And so, yes. Yes, Mom.
I mentioned before, I get on these, all these crazy ads, you know, everybody else gets too. But it seems like some of these that are supplements that are for it do have some calcium, but they have strontium and they have D and K in them. Are they likely to make any difference? I mean, I'm concerned because I'm a spring chicken.
Yeah.
And I don't want to.
You know, let me answer this in this way, okay? I want us to imagine a bricklayer, okay? A bricklayer who, on a daily basis, he or she is capable of using 500 bricks, okay, to build a fence, brick fence, okay, or wall. Okay? Now, you have a supply truck coming, and the supply truck is going to dump 1,000 bricks, okay? How many bricks is the bricklayer going to use that particular day? 500. Because that's how much he or she is capable of using in this particular day, you know, in, say, 8-hour shift, you know, regardless of how much bricks or how many bricks were brought for him to work with. The next day, the bricklayer is going to use how many bricks? 500. That's how much he's capable, he or she is capable of utilizing, you see? And what I'm trying to say by this is, remember my points in the beginning? Number one, the recommendation for calcium is higher than it should be. Number two is the intake is pretty much at the recommendation, okay? Number three, calcium supplements did not really show to have any impact. Number four, calcium supplements show to be actually detrimental for some conditions like cardiovascular disease, you see? So whether we take that calcium, that extra calcium by itself, whether we take it with something else, I like to think of the body as a bricklayer. The body is only going to utilize 500 bricks that we will likely ingest from the foods, if not more of the bricks that we will supply with the foods. And so to me, the impact, or there is no need for that extra calcium, regardless of whether that's just calcium, regardless of whether that's calcium with vitamin K, regardless of whether that's calcium with vitamin D. Are you following what I'm saying?
Like it would help the actual absorption
in the
body to use it, you know, if you have like
calcium
and so on with it. But I don't know what the...
Yeah, so vitamin D does help with calcium absorption, okay? With that I can agree with, okay? Vitamin K has nothing to do with calcium absorption. It does not have anything to do with calcium absorption, okay? But again, whether we will need that extra calcium, that's the question. And remember that just because vitamin D will impact calcium absorption, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's actually better. Because if we already provide that 500 bricks from foods, that extra calcium that we will be absorbing because of the vitamin D impact will likely go into the soft body tissues. You see? The blood vessels, the brain, the kidneys. Because the brick layer in our body, does not need more calcium than the 500 layers or bricks that we ingest with foods. You see? I would not recommend it personally. You know, if we are to recommend people evidence-based, that's a popular phrase in healthcare, evidence-based advice, the evidence, I show you the evidence. I can actually add twice as many studies. In fact, I can add way more studies that I showed you, but they all point pretty much all point in the same direction. You know, in fact, let me tell you something interesting. Okay, this February, I participated in a 7th International Congress on Vegetarian Nutrition at Loma Linda University in California. Some of you must be familiar with Loma Linda University, okay? Now, I forget whether it was the previous Congress or two Congresses back, the organizers actually had a symposium that was entitled, I don't remember word for word, but something like, should vegetarians eat dairy to get adequate calcium? Okay? And they actually had two scientists presenting the opposite views. Okay? One scientist presented the view that I showed you. Research does not support the idea that more calcium will have any impact on osteoporosis. The other scientist that presented the view that we should be ingesting more calcium was actually a scientist that built her career from grants that she obtained from the National Dairy Council. You know? So she was sponsored by the industry, and she pretty much spent, I don't know, 20 or 25 years of her professional faculty career based on these grants. And you know what was the most interesting part of it all? How little research she was able to put in her slides to support her position. She pretty much had no scientific research to show that extra calcium will decrease the risk of fractures. What she focused on was what I showed you from the data from the National Council, National Dairy Council, and that is that we don't ingest enough calcium in comparison to the recommendation. That was pretty much the focus. There was a complete lack of data in her from studies that have been conducted over the years to support her position. And that was the most telling of anything, you know? So, you had something, right?
Yeah, I wanted to add to what you said. We just need to remember that God created us, and He created us in a, such a way that things, I don't think, the supplements were available for other people than our generation. Usually supplements is something that's just come into modern world. And God created us in such a way that we're going to absorb all the nutrients we need for our body to be healthy through food. And in the food, it's not only calcium, but there are other minerals that kind of support
that
the calcium absorption. And sometimes you can put a lot of calcium in your system, but you don't have the nutrients that will support the absorption. And it's just going to go, it's going to be to waste.
That is true. Now, on the other hand, I'm not against all supplements, right? In fact, I don't remember, I talked about B12 last time here, I can't remember the other topic, but in North Augusta, I talked about vitamin D already once, and some other ones, and especially in the wintertime, we may need vitamin D supplements. I'm just saying, when we look at calcium supplement in the context of osteoporosis, they simply do not do the trick, you see? There is actually some benefits for calcium supplements for certain groups of people. Research has shown that when you are pregnant, for example, and you take calcium supplement, you will actually decrease the risk of hypertension, okay? So there's some impact. There's research that shows that calcium supplements decrease the risk of colorectal cancer, okay? Depending on what we look at, there might be benefits and it might be neutral impact and there might be some harm. When it comes to osteoporosis prevention, at best it is neutral, at worst it's actually detrimental. It is not beneficial when it comes to specifically calcium supplements. Look, tomorrow I have two more, okay? Should I mention the topics or? Okay, so the pastor actually asked me to also have another presentation under a title, Burger Anyone, okay? So we'll be discussing burgers tomorrow. And the last presentation that I will have tomorrow, I will discuss the most important nutritional factor that impacts the risk of disease, like cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, things of that nature, and also longevity, okay? And this particular factor that I will be discussing, I will not tell you now what it is, because I want you to come, okay? This particular factor has been shown consistently in studies. You know, studies are not always showing black and white. Sometimes one study shows, you know, this impact, another study shows a different impact. For this particular factor, all the studies show the same direction, that this factor is beneficial for reducing the risk of disease and increasing longevity, okay? And tomorrow morning at 11, I will also have a biblical topic. I will be talking about the Heavenly Father. What is our Heavenly Father like, okay? That's my topic for tomorrow morning at 11. So I hope you will be back, and I thank you for coming tonight. Thank you. Let's pray. Why don't we finish with a prayer just like we started, okay? Father, we thank you very much for allowing us to be here and learning about how to take care of our bodies, Father. And we thank you for creating the foods that are actually good for us, and that now we have the knowledge that we can apply into our lives and further prevent the risk of developing osteoporosis and fractures. I pray that you will bless us as we go home, give us good rest, and then we'll be able to come back tomorrow and learn more. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.